Mobility Matters is supported with funding from the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration in the interest of information exchange. The NJTPA and FHWA assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places, seen pictures of the rest. But of all the places I can't think of, I like Jersey best.
Good morning, and welcome to this episode of Mobility Matters. I'm your host, Bill Neary. Thank you for joining us today. And for those who are new to the show, I'm the executive director of Keep Middlesex Moving. It's Middlesex County's nonprofit transportation management association. For over 30 years, KMM has been working with commuters, employers, local, county, and state government to reduce traffic congestion and improve our air quality. We promote and support carpools, vanpools, mass transit, bicycling, and walking. We provide timely information about road and transit conditions. We present safety programming for children, teens, and adults. And we work with the state, regional, and local agencies to promote workforce development. Therefore, today's show will focus on workforce development and discussing how transportation and access to jobs and industries that are located in New Jersey. So first, allow me to introduce our special guest. We have the Commissioner of New Jersey's Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Robert Asaro Angelo, the Executive Director of Einstein's Alley, Catherine Kish, and the Department Head of Middlesex County's Department of Business Development and Education, working with Workforce Development, Kevin Kurdzel. I want to thank you all for taking time out of your very busy schedules to join us today. I think when we look at transportation and we look at workforce, they do go hand in hand in so many different ways. And I think it's great that you people here are experts in the field and can add so much more information that we need to know about as we go into the future and look at today's present situations. So, Commissioner, thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
How does the economic outlook in New Jersey? Doing pretty good?
I think we're doing great right now. There's currently more – right now today, there are more people working in New Jersey than at any other point in our state's history. More than 12,000 more than last year at this time. Our unemployment rate recently ticked down 0.2 percentage points to 3.9% in New Jersey. Thanks to like positive bumps like this, over the year, New Jersey private sector employers have added 52,900 jobs.
That's virtually full employment.
Yes, we're definitely at almost full employment.
Which is an interesting part when you look at it. The Murphy administration, I know, has been very very progressive in the way they're looking at things that are happening for people's jobs. And that's why we're looking at a pretty good budget this year. We have some surplus and everything else.
We sure do. And, you know, I've been here for 16 months in this job. And as you mentioned, we've been doing a lot of things in the legislature, working with our partners in the legislature on to help workers in New Jersey, whether it be expanding family leave, earned sick days, equal pay, raising the minimum wage. And I know this is a lot being thrown at employers at one time. But to be honest, when I meet with employers around New Jersey, whether it be a trade group or an individual employer or business, their biggest concern is finding workers. And I think most of them realize that providing these benefits to level the playing field, to improve the lives of all New Jerseyans, helps them recruit talent. But definitely right now at almost full employment, businesses are looking for as much help as they can get finding workers. And transportation is always top of mind, whether I'm talking to workers about getting to their job or getting to a training program or employers trying to get workers to where their facility is. It's something that comes up way more than I ever expected in this job, to be honest.
And, Commissioner, you do have other hats that have to be part of this job. Workforce development, obviously, is part of it. But you also have wage and hour compliance, unemployment insurance, workers' competition and compensation. Yeah. So you have a lot of issues that you have to face with the workers who are already employed.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt we have a lot of worker protections in our department. Like I said, because of a good economy, we're trying to do a lot of stuff to push forward for workers. Luckily, we're at a spot right now where, because of the good economy, we haven't had a lot of issues with our unemployment insurance. We've increased our solvency every year for the past couple of years, when we move to a better column shift on the employment side, businesses pay less into it. Trying to do a lot of work to make sure that in this good economy, that workers are having good jobs, not just a job, which means making sure that they're classified as employees so that way they can get the benefits that we've been working on and talking about, whether it be an increased minimum wage, unemployment insurance, make sure they're employees that are more likely to have health insurance, access to family leave, access to temporary disability, and to make sure that they have a career pathway when they're working with those jobs. So we're doing a lot of working with small businesses as well to talk about having a career pathway. When you talk about finding workers, especially in a tight labor market, it's not just about saying, hey, here's this job that's open and we pay X amount. It's about what are we going to do next for you? Where is your pathway in this job? It's not just about getting a job at a warehouse or as a driver. What is going to be next for you down the road in this business 5 years down the road? So trying to work with employers, great partners, like workforce boards around the state, trying to talk to employers about, okay, what is the next step for somebody? How do you do internal professional development? How do you create pathways for folks and career ladders, and even in small businesses? Even if it's a smaller business that doesn't have a lot of openings or a lot of spots at it, we're trying to figure out ways to create partnerships across industries with their competitors, quite frankly, to talk about we need to create a talent ecosystem in this industry so folks know that if they get into this industry or they come get a entry-level job here at my company, they know there's something up the ladder, even if it's not my company, it might be my competitor down the street. We need to work cohesively to bring that talent to bear.
Well, I think it's an interesting point you're talking about, the career ladders. Whatever job you're taking at the beginning of your career is going to give you certain training and certain skills that you can take to another job. And I think that what you're working on in terms of development of jobs with an educated workforce, continuing education and talent skills being developed is all part of how you get this career ladder you're talking about.
Absolutely. Trying to make credentials more available and transparent for workers and for businesses. Trying to help them figure out what training programs are the most successful coming from the employee side and the employer side. Because, the model of we need to learn everything we need to know for our lives by age 22 and then just hope to wing it from there is not really sustainable in the future of work. So we're doing a lot of work with our partners in education and higher ed and with businesses across the state about creating lifelong learning platforms so folks can be retrained or upskilled throughout their career.
Well, and Commissioner, I think you're doing a great job with that. When we understand that that's necessary, New Jersey already has a highly educated workforce, yep, which makes it desirable for businesses to be here. But they can maintain that higher education, whatever it happens to be, whether it's skilled labor or it's one of the service industries. It's really great that people know that there's a state behind what they have to do, and the community colleges and the regular universities can work. And I think it's a key to what you're doing in your position to put it all together.
Right, and we're trying to build off the work of my predecessor, Commissioners Wirth and Fichtner, and under the last administration, I created a goal of 65 by 25, where we want to have 65% of New Jerseyans have some kind of post-secondary credential by the year 2025, whether that be a college degree or an apprenticeship certificate or some kind of industry-valued credential in their field. We're not quite there yet. We have 6 more years to get there. We're about a little over 50% right now, which is very high compared to other states in the country. But we want to get to 65. And again, it's not just about a college degree. It's about what kind of credentials are the most important for them to get finding a job and for their business.
That's great. I think one of the things that we face at KMM, of course, is what you're facing, is how difficult sometimes, even though it's maybe about 10 miles in New Jersey is a long way.
Yes.
If you live in Nebraska someplace, commuting for an hour isn't such a big deal because you can go 400 miles in that.
Right.
But at the same time, here we've got a compressed state. The jobs are not necessarily accessible directly to people who are starting off in their careers. So you're working on different commuting programs for people, I hope?
We're trying to work with businesses to talk to our colleagues, whether it be NJ Transit or other organizations. We're trying to provide stipends through some of our training programs for folks to get to a job. A lot of times you hear about when I talk to workers – let me back up for a second. When we're at almost full employment, the folks who are still looking for jobs – are the ones that tend to have the highest barriers to employment. And a lot of times that barrier is transportation, whether they don't have a driver's license for some reason or they can't afford to have a car. They don't live near a bus line or a train line. But as we know, there's a lot of options out there for transportation. But we're trying to – we're having training programs for folks who are trying to return to the workforce or trying to get into the workforce or trying to encourage our partners to provide some kind of transportation stipend to get them up, to get their foot in the door, get them earning a salary so they can figure out afford other full-time transportation options.
Well, I think that's a big issue that we're going to be facing because I also believe based upon where the jobs are coming from, it's not necessarily on the old city transit routes.
Right.
And New Jersey Transit, as good as it is and as big as it is never going to do the door-to-door service.
No.
And I think it's important that the businesses themselves are starting to recognize the fact that if they're not helping to contribute, they're going to be having left shorthanded in terms of workforce.
I talk all the time about employers having skin in the game, that if you're desperate for workers, that you need – it's not just about posting a job. You need to take that extra step And if you're a large employer, like I've met with many of them who say they can't find workers because they can't get them to the job, but there's this downtown 5 miles away, the cost of paying for a shuttle bus or something like that is de minimis compared to the expense they're spending every month trying to find the workers to fill those jobs.
And not to mention retention. Right. I mean, they're actually hiring people who now can get to work on a regular basis. So they're getting not only people who are going to be getting to work, they're going to want to stay to work because they can get it. If transportation becomes an issue for an employer and an employee, it's a difficult problem.
Yeah, especially in lower wage jobs. I mean, luckily we're going to be increasing the minimum wage to $10 an hour in just a few weeks right now. So that will help employees be able to afford different transportation options. But there's such a turnover rate and a churn rate at those lower wage jobs that having those extra benefits like transportation are going to help employees stay where they are. Because a lot of times employers come to us saying there's such a problem with churn and it's costing them so much time and energy filling spots over and over again. So every little extra step you can take to keep employees there is going to pay off benefit-wise down the road.
Well, having a car in New Jersey is an expensive thing.
Yes.
And if you're starting a new job, it's not easy just to have a car. We work at KMM in carpools and vanpools and incentives that way. We try to work with groups of people who can ride share. But it is a difficult challenge. And the other part, of course, the challenge is our transit system is based upon the old sun-up-to-sunrise schedules. And workforce anymore, it's a 24-hour day.
Yep.
It's people just don't work 9 to 5. Those type of problems are facing some of these employers. They work around the clock, and the transportation isn't there.
Yeah, we've actually been helping a lot of employers right here in Middlesex County try to find employees to go to the third shift.
Yes.
A lot of different manufacturing facilities, distribution facilities.
We hear about this at KMM on a regular basis is that, you know, we're okay with the morning day, our daytime shift. Nighttime shift is impossible sometimes. And so I think that's where it's one of the challenges that you have to face. One of the challenges I read about in the paper, of course, is people like me, retired people. I'm not retired yet, but when I am retired, I'm probably not going to want to stop working. And there was an article in the paper the other day that was pretty funny about how if you're just retired, you probably don't want to look into want ads for a job anymore, okay, because those kind of ways are over. So technology, changes in technology is certainly for an older workforce. Somebody younger than me, maybe 20 years younger than me, now losing their job or changing careers, has to know that technology advances are going to change the way they look for a job too.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. We're trying to upgrade our own systems at the Department of Labor, working with our partners in the counties. We're in the process of upgrading our job search technologies, whether folks are fine for unemployment or come through our workforce, our doors, the workforce system in other ways, that they have a readily available system on their phones, on their computers, where we're going to be able to pushing jobs in that match their skill sets, match their competencies. And I know about this because I was unemployed about a year and a half ago. And I filed for UI, and then when you do that, they send you these job descriptions about jobs that are open in your area. And they had nothing to do with what my skill set was or what my past history was. And I don't blame anybody. It's just how technology works. So we're trying to talk about credentials before, working with a group called Credential Engine to really make credentials more transparent and portable and to help folks realize that, you know, you could be working at a job for 10 years and you still only have your college degree or high school diploma as a credential, even though you've picked up tons of skill sets at that current job. So we're trying to figure out ways to help you measure what those skill sets are, what those competencies are, and put that into a package. And then when we're looking for a job, say when an employer posts a job on our system, it's going to, you know, have a basically underlying data code of what are the skill sets and competencies needed for that job. And we'll be able to help you match what your skill sets and competencies are to what's out there.
Skill sets are important. I know when I got my degree in history in 1971, I never dreamt about becoming the executive director of a transportation management association.
Right.
Those
right.
type of jobs are based upon different types of skill sets that you get over the years, and be able to match it up I think is great. So you're basically not just looking for the day's problems and the workforce development today. You're looking for tomorrow too.
Absolutely.
And the future looks pretty bright, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, New Jersey, we are you know, as I'm sure you talked about here before, especially Middlesex County, being the hub of the state, we're really the hub of a huge Northeast economy. And I talk about I don't want to compete with New York and Pennsylvania and other states. We are a regional economy. And if we're not working together to improve our workforce in this region, obviously being the transportation hub with the Port Newark and Port Elizabeth, you know, Turnpike, Airways coming in here, our location is prime.
Middlesex County is the only place where the Turnpike and the Parkway cross.
Yes. I'm very
it's a crossroads.
Yeah. So my point is that our economy is going to be good here as long as the regional economy is good for a while. And even with that, obviously we're going to, we're approaching or already in a retirement boom. So we're going to need to backfill jobs for a long time coming. So we need to make sure that our department is able to help workers meet them where they are and help employers find those employees based on those competencies and skills.
Well, Commissioner, I really appreciate you taking the time today. I think your vision and your mission and everything else seems to be coming together. Congratulations on the good job you're doing now, and keep up the good work.
We're trying.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a few.
Have you ever wondered if you need a helmet when you ride your bike or skate? Well, studies show that if you use a seatbelt in your car, have a smoke detector in your home, and look both ways before crossing the street, you certainly do. But if you cut your grass barefoot, play golf in thunderstorms, and pinch the grounding pin off the three-prong plugs, you might not want to bother. Personal safety is all about your own head and how much you value it. If you have something to protect, wear a bike helmet when you ride.
Join me, Gary Sullivan, on At Home with Gary Sullivan this weekend. We'll answer your questions about painting, insulation, ventilation, mold, or how to refinish the laminate countertop. I'll help you protect your biggest investment, your home. I'll take your calls about your house and interview home improvement experts every weekend. So join us and learn how to do it, what to use, and where to get the products you need to be successful. Looking forward to your calls.
Sunday morning at 10 on the new Talk Radio 1450 WCTC.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Are you liking Keep Middlesex Moving on Facebook, following them on Twitter, and safely snapping pictures of your commute on Instagram? Connect with KMM Online and find out what everyone is talking about. Download the free NJ Traffic app, register for a carpool, get your New Jersey Transit bus and transit info, and access to their fantastic giveaway programs. To connect with KMM Online, log on to KMM.org and click on the Facebook and Twitter icon, funded by the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority and the Federal Highway Administration, which assume no liability for its contents.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of
places. Welcome back to Mobility Matters. We're here today with the Commissioner of New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Robert Asaro Angelo, the Executive Director of Einstein's Alley, Catherine Kish, and the Department Head from Middlesex County's Department of Business Development and Education, Kevin Kurzel. I'm your host, Bill Neary, from Keep Middlesex Moving. Thank you for tuning in today. And our next guest is Catherine Kish from Einstein's Alley. It's a private, nonprofit economic development initiative located in central New Jersey. By central New Jersey, we call it Einstein's Alley because it basically is from Edison to Princeton with Thomas Edison and Albert Einstein along Route 1 corridor. Its mission is to foster economic growth through advocacy and delivery of services. So, Catherine, thank you for joining us today. I know we've talked with the commissioner about how we're working today for workforce development, how strong it is to develop a good workforce and an educated workforce. But what Einstein's Alley spends a lot of time looking at is how the workforce is going to change. When we're looking at transportation and specific transportation issues, we know autonomous vehicles are going to disrupt our workforce more than probably anything else. We're not going to have cab drivers necessarily. We're not going to have truck drivers in the future. Maybe not today, but certainly tomorrow. And those type of changes, I think, Einstein's Alley looks at. You look at the future of work. So you give us a little bit of idea of what it means today for young people and their parents who are thinking about what's going to happen in the future.
You know, it's fascinating to listen to the commissioner's statistics and put it in the context of what is the future of work. But I was struck by so many things that the commissioner was talking about. We raised the question of older workers. We skirted around but talked in a way about immigration being key. That benefits are a part of a good job. So that leads us to think about the gig economy. Making apprenticeships easy for organizations, for companies to participate in. Measuring the competencies in existing jobs is a fascinating idea. And I think about, you know, you mentioned Thomas Edison. We have a university in this state named after Thomas Edison. And one of the things Thomas Edison University does is it looks at the kinds of competencies adults come to school with and is able to measure them. And I'm just thinking about taking programs like the Thomas Edison, or I went to a school called Antioch that worked on that same model of measuring competencies. That's a
Antioch,
fascinating
is that college in Ohio where you're basically the course load is kind of designed by you, and you have every year you have to spend at least like 3 months doing some kind of an apprenticeship or
yes,
something.
Yes, exactly.
It was a different type of education.
A
I remember
whole
reading
different,
about,
yes. Because
when my son was looking at college, we looked at Antioch in a different kind of way.
Yes.
I liked it, but it's certainly a little bit different.
Well, it's that work-study experience, which is the way we really need to live our lives going forward. We are all going to be participating in this work-study economy. I'm also struck by the commissioner's statement about New Jersey's location. It's a very desirable place to be based on its location. I remember meeting a consultant named Michael Gallis who worked for the Transportation Commission, and he talked about the world's great trading systems, and there's Europe, the whole European common market. There's the Pacific region, including our West Coast, but there's Boston to Washington to Harrisburg, and that is one of the world's great trading zones, and what is right smack dab in the middle of that but New Jersey? So we are in a remarkable, remarkable location for logistics, for transportation in general, and really for the development, the manufacturing, and the movement of goods. This is a very exciting place to be. It's kind of a sweet spot, I think, in the whole U.S. Economy.
Well, several years ago, my wife and I were traveling in China. And we're at the gift shop in Xi'an where the Terracotta Warriors are. And the man behind the gift counter said to me, USA? And I said, yes, USA. And he says, where? And I said, New Jersey. He said, oh, 8A? Okay, so you're talking about a
the
sweet
warehouses.
Spot.
The warehouses. Yes, yes. The world knows 8A.
He knew 8A,
8A
New Jersey, okay?
Yes, indeed.
And remember, with our infrastructure investments, the state is actually doing things. The one issue, of course, with transportation we always talk about is it's going to be virtually impossible to build our way out of congestion. So other investments in terms of complete streets, biking, walking, making communities function sustainable all by themselves are all important. But a major investment was done to raise the Bayonne Bridge.
Yes.
By raising the Bayonne Bridge when the Panama Canal reopened and widened, mm-hmm. Well, it already's been done. It's been widened. Mm-hmm. Now the container ships can be three times the size they were before. If we didn't raise the Bayonne Bridge, they wouldn't be able to get into our ports.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. That's kind of investments are necessary for our future.
Absolutely. And so important. You know, we sit here with people debating about climate change. Last night in New Jersey, we were under tornado watches for the first time in a very long time. And you think about us as a world climate zone. One of the things that's happening is right now our Arctic is thawing. And we are seeing shipping that is going to start going through the Arctic Circle and around the Great Northwest Passage that explorers were looking for hundreds of years ago, and maybe not so much in the Suez Canal, and maybe even not so much in the Panama Canal. So we're looking at shipping zones worldwide being changed, but New Jersey's port is still going to be an important, very important place.
That's going to be reflective in the type of workforce development. I mean, you don't have stevedores anymore. You have a different type of technology.
So absolutely.
As people change jobs, I just briefly tell a quick story how I ended up in New Jersey is my father came back from World War II and through the GI Bill learned to be a welder in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And as the coal mines were closing down in Scranton, he was like he said, he worked every day, didn't get paid every week. They opened up Delco Remy on Jersey Avenue right down the road from us here. General Motors did. And they went up to Pennsylvania and got those skilled laborers to come to New Jersey. That's how I ended up in New Jersey in 1955. Delco Battery is no longer there. It's now a freight yard for the trains that are coming down the Northeast Corridor. Those type of changes have occurred in my lifetime. The changes are going to occur in the next lifetime is going to be just as dramatic in terms of transportation. And those are the things I think we have to make sure that there's people like the commissioner and the workforce development people and Einstein's Alley and everybody working together to see at least a crystal ball kind of image.
Absolutely. We know that as we're looking ahead at artificial intelligence, at robotics, at
digital, huge data digital banks of information. We know that that work is going to change. McKinsey, the big consulting firm, says as many as 49% of our jobs could radically change or maybe even disappear.
When's the last time you spoke to a bank teller?
Yes, good point. Banks are now serving coffee as their as their big thing. But you know, the whole idea of what is the role for people going forward? What are the jobs that people are going to do? We know that the augmentation by machines is going to be very important. The whole the wealth of technology that we have. You were talking about warehouses before, and we look at a modern warehouse, and you know that there are all these strange little machines running around that are bringing goods, and people aren't doing that anymore. My husband and I went to visit the Ford F-150 plant in Detroit one time, and I almost thought they were out on a holiday or something, because there were so few people on the floor, but the robots were busy. And, you know, we are going to see manufacturing environments that look like that more and more. If your job can be written down, very soon it will be able to be done by a machine. So the question is, what is the value that we as people bring to our work? It's certainly the interpersonal. It is certainly the educations that we have. But there is so much going on that is changing. And people say, well, you know, we got through the agricultural revolution just fine. It took 100 years. We went from 40% of our population working on farms down to 2%. And then you stop and think, what happened to the 38% of people who used to be farmers?
And we still have food.
And we still have more food than we've ever had before. So it's interesting to think about how a society absorbs these changes. But these changes are coming faster than we've ever seen before. We don't have 100 years to absorb the technological changes that are coming. And so what does that mean? I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at is we are, again, so fortunate to be in New Jersey. We are a little tiny state with over 60 colleges and universities. That's amazing. I mean, you talk about 10 miles. You are no further than 10 miles away from an institution that can help you learn something.
Well, in Middlesex County, of course, there's 900,000 people, which is Pittsburgh and Cincinnati combined.
Combined,
I mean,
yes.
When you think about it.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's amazing. I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at in thinking about is, you know, right now we say that public schooling should be K-12. I'm thinking maybe it's time for us to look at a K-14 model. And those two extra years that we think about will be either leading toward a certification or an associate's degree. But I think we need to change our expectations for our young people in order for them to be successful in this future of work that we're talking about, to think more about how do they get the skill sets that they need before they're 22, and then how do they keep on getting them? Because one of the things you talked about was the older individual. And I find that that's a very frustrated group that I meet. I'll meet a 50-year-old engineer who's been working for the same company for 20 or 30 years, and who says, well, we may have full employment in the state, but I can't find a job. And the reason is number one, that mismatch of skills and opportunities. Number two, oftentimes older people haven't thought about keeping up their networks, as we call them, going to professional association meetings, meeting colleagues outside their own company, doing the due diligence of thinking about short-term certifications that they can take to keep up their skills. And so we find that there are pockets within our workforce that we have to work on
even in this very, very fine economy that we're looking at with
these great numbers. We tend to look at the future of jobs through robotics replacing people. But robots aren't the only reason that we're facing these issues. I mean, I know thanks to artificial intelligence and everything else, jobs of insurance actuaries aren't necessary anymore. The engineering work you're talking about can be done a lot simpler by one person on a computer than by six people with an engineering degree.
Absolutely.
You have issues. Artificial intelligence will probably be providing some diagnosis for diseases, so doctors may not have to do as much specialized training and testing. So changes are going to happen in all levels of the workforce thanks to the technology changes that are coming about.
I mean, we've just come through tax season. If there's one job that's going to change, it's the job of the accountant. Things are going to be different because more and more of that can be done by a smart machine. And so then the question comes is, where does the human being come in to do the fine tuning? Where does the actual accountant come in to give you advice on what you should be doing in the future? But the work of, you know, the green eye shade work will now going forth be done by a machine. You mentioned doctors. One of the things that we're seeing, and I think I just saw a New York Presbyterian Hospital commercial that talks about a fellow who was in a remote location and had a stroke. And luckily, they got him to an emergency room, and the emergency room was able to bring in a doctor long distance by Skype and bring in some computer assistance so that even a small community hospital in East Bajip Nowhere was able to have that current medical help that they needed to save this man's speech and save the movement in his arms. So to your point, lawyers, you know, we all were encouraging our young people to go and get law degrees. No more. We don't need the numbers of lawyers. We don't need the numbers of research assistants because, again, that's all being done now by machine and by big data.
There's a surgeon in Johns Hopkins that I know about who's doing surgeries in Brazil from his office in his house in Baltimore.
Exactly.
Anyway, I think we sound kind of depressing, but at the same time, I think what you pointed out was really important, that these changes are coming. If we have a workforce development programs in place that can look into these type of changes and do the type of investments we need in education, I think the future still looks bright. People just have to see what it is and be able to make these changes themselves. So thank you, Catherine, for coming here. I think Einstein's Alley is certainly innovative, certainly progressive in some ways, looking into the future and working with what we have today, I think is great. So we're going to take another little break now, and I want to thank you. We'll be back in a few. Thank you.
May is New Jersey Walk and Bike to School Month. Students, parents, teachers, and school staff all across New Jersey will be walking and bicycling to school throughout the month of May. Walking and bicycling to school not only increase physical activity and encourage healthy lifestyles among children, but they also improve the environment through decreased traffic volumes and better air quality. Most importantly, students who are physically active, like walking, bicycling, skateboarding to school, arrive ready to learn and perform better in class. So go outside and get some exercise with your kids. Celebrate 4NJ Walk and Bike to School Month by leaving your car at home and walking or bicycling with your children to school. Anyone interested in participating in Middlesex County can contact their Safe Routes to School coordinator at KMM, Chris Gonda, for assistance with your event. Information is also available on saferoutesnj.org if you don't live in Middlesex County.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Don't let a little static come between you and the WCTC talk you love. Listen live to WCTC on your mobile or any Alexa-enabled device. Or log on to WCTCAM.com and listen for free right on your computer. Just because you're not in Middlesex, Somerset, or Union counties doesn't mean you can't hear WCTC. Connect with WCTC from anywhere for the best in local and national talk. Rutgers football and basketball, Somerset Patriots baseball, and your favorite WCTC shows.
Traveling down the turnpike, heading for the shore. A thought just then occurred to me I never thought before. I've been a lot of places.
Welcome back to Mobility Matters. Today we're here with Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Robert Assaro-Angelo. the executive director of Einstein's Alley, Catherine Kish, and the department head from Middlesex County Department of Business Development and Education, Kevin Kurdzel. I'm Bill Neary from Keep Middlesex Moving. I want to thank you for joining us today. So our last segment, I think, is going to be a lot more of a discussion type of thing, but I want to make sure we get some specific information about how workforce development and economic development go hand in hand in Middlesex County. Kevin Kurdzel is the director. Kevin, you've been working on this and seeing in Middlesex County, we had the commissioner talk about low unemployment.
Right.
Doesn't mean no unemployment.
Exactly.
It still means there are people who need this type of education and training and at the same time make the transition
sure.
to where the world is going. So how's it going in Middlesex County?
Well, good. First of all, I want to thank you for having all of us on. I think this has been a great discussion so far. Sometimes people don't think that workforce development, economic development, and transportation relate, but they're definitely intertwined. And so it's great to have this discussion. But specifically here in Middlesex County, I think what we're trying to do is we have two career one-stop centers. And if you talk to anybody that either works in workforce development or even in the public and you say, well, what does a career one-stop center do? They'll probably tell you, well, the career one-stop centers exist to put people into jobs and that's who you serve. And while that is
by
true –
one-stop, when you say one-stop, that means actually a person looking for employment
sure.
can get what they need. At least get the information they need and at the same time the services they need to provide job placement.
Right.
Interviews.
Right. And so in Middlesex County, we have two career one-stop centers, one in New Brunswick at 550 Jersey Avenue and also one in Perth Amboy at 161 New Brunswick Avenue on the third floor. And as I said, people would normally say, well, you know, yes, you exist to put place people into jobs and find them jobs. And while that is true, we really have two distinct customers that we serve. One is the job seeker, which we look at as the supply side of our operation. But then we also have the businesses, and I consider them our primary customer because they're the demand side. And if we don't have jobs to place people into, there's no sense in having somebody walk in the door to say that we can help you. So that is one thing that I think over the last several years we've been really trying to nail down here in Middlesex County is to try to build a better bridge between our local services with local businesses and helping them identify the job seekers that have the skills they need to basically provide a great workforce to the businesses here, not only in Middlesex County, but within the region as well.
Well, I think that's an interesting part because you don't think about that. When you think about the workforce development, you always mm-hmm. think of the workers themselves.
Right.
But having the businesses tied into knowing where the workforce is
sure.
is certainly a key element to what you have to do.
Right. And both the commissioner and Catherine have touched upon a lot of, I think, themes that are very prevalent in the workforce development arena today. For example, working with individuals from the ground up. We talked about career ladders, career pathways. That's crucial. And in my opinion, every job leads to a career pathway or career ladder. I don't care if it's a person pumping gas. I don't care if it's an individual who comes out of college with a advanced degree. Wherever they start, there is always room for advancement in working within that industry. And also, Bill, you touched upon something before. You know, you said you have a degree in history. Well, and you never thought you'd be director of a transportation management a company or organization. But quite frankly, most people come out of college, end up working in a different industry or something that they probably didn't think that they would be doing. I went to school for broadcasting. I never thought I would be a workforce board director. Number one, when I got out of college, I didn't know what that was. But number two, that's not, you know, when I was 5 years old, I didn't say, yeah, I want to be a workforce board director. So sometimes we accidentally get involved into industries that we never thought about. And it's all about transferable skills. How do you take the skills that you have and transfer it into another industry? And that's really what makes you marketable to industries and to businesses today. It's what you can bring to the table, not only the soft skills, because that's important. People and businesses want individuals who are going to show up to work on time and do the work and know how to communicate, because most companies will train people to their organization, how they want their staff to be trained. But those soft skills are very important, and the transferable skills that you can bring to the table are probably the most valuable to business that you can provide today.
Well, I always told my son I majored in history because back in those days it was much easier, so much less of it.
Sure.
It was a lot easier. But you're right. I mean, my first jobs getting out of college was in retail.
Right.
Low-paying retail jobs that end up becoming retail management, retail supervisor, and those
right.
type of things.
Sure.
Then I transitioned into a crazy job as a coal miner for a couple of years,
right.
which I never anticipated. But the final part is I was self-employed as a businessman. And the skills I got working in high school in the Chicken Delight and in college mm-hmm. working at a pizza place transferred into retail jobs and into my own business. And so those type of things were all built upon the career ladders we talk
right.
about. And I think that's where people have to understand the skills that they have can take them in different directions. But the important part is to stay on top of your skills and understand Catherine was talking about networking.
Sure.
The commissioner was talking about continuing education.
Right.
All those things are important.
So speaking of continuing education and how you advance your workforce, one of the things here in Middlesex County that we did, and we were actually one of the first counties in the state to pull the trigger on this, was incumbent worker training. So we set aside 20% of our budget every year to devote towards incumbent worker training. Our first project was about 2 years ago with Sunny Delight in South Brunswick. What we did was we trained all of their workers through our funding and through a training provider, trained all of their staff, almost about 100 people, in Six Sigma lean management. And so each employee there was able to go through some aspect of Six Sigma training. And what that did was it made their plant more efficient. So they were able to take a production line where they had to change the bottle size, for example. And it took them roughly between 45 minutes and an hour to change that line over. Through Six Sigma lean management training, they got that time down to about 8 minutes, which means they expanded and significantly improved their productivity, which actually prevented them from closing down, because that was one plant that was targeted for closing. So by making it more efficient, they provided their workers with skills that basically made them a more efficient company. And now what that did was it allowed them to advance some of their workforce into new jobs and open up other entry-level positions. So that's really one aspect of workforce development that's very important is about working with the businesses to train their existing workforce as well. That's very important.
I think that's great that you can do those type of programs, because stagnation would be the worst thing you can do. And,
exactly.
And a business that would get stagnant would have that happen kind of problems, because they've done it the same way.
Sure.
In, day out.
Right.
Things change.
Yeah.
Things
and it actually cuts down a company's turnover rate, too, because what happens is the workforce believes the company is making an investment into their future. And that speaks volumes, because if you're working at a company, you know, and you're stagnant and you're not moving anywhere and you don't see development in your personal growth, you're going to go somewhere else, especially in today's economy where we're talking about almost full employment. People are going to move from job to job. So you want to make sure that if you have qualified people on your workforce, that you upskill them and make sure that they have the skills necessary to take your business to the next level, and to also make sure that you protect your business and make sure that your business stays where it's at. You don't want to have to talk about laying people off or moving a facility somewhere else, because as we heard today, New Jersey is a great state to do business in, and not only our geographic location, but just the great resources that we have at our fingertips. It's great to do business in. So, you know, why would you want to move down south when you can take your workforce, get some incumbent worker training money, and have the best workforce possible without having to go somewhere else?
And I think that for all those reasons, and New Jersey's location is also good for your quality of life outside of work.
Right.
And I think
Absolutely.
That's all those type of things that we use as our incentives to try and keep the businesses here.
Right.
And the fact that we can have this location, and we all do our complaints about New Jersey
sure.
and all the issues. But when you look at the lifestyles that we have, the education opportunities that we have, the job location,
right.
the job performances that can be done,
right.
is all part of a positive aspect for the future, too.
Sure. And earlier, you know, we were talking about jobs that maybe will change or not exist anymore because of technology changes, but there still are some jobs out there that will never change in terms of the human element. They might change in terms of technology assisting people with jobs, but for example, plumbers, electricians, mechanics, you're always going to need somebody in those positions. Technology changes. I mean, now for somebody to be a car mechanic is probably more computer-based and technology-oriented than it's ever been. So again, things like apprenticeship programs are very important, because apprenticeship, which the commissioner didn't speak about, but his administration at Department of Labor is putting a big push on apprenticeship programs, where you can take somebody basically with virtual, very little skills in a certain area, and again, upskill them into a job that will basically help them in the future, not only just growth in that employer, but growth in the industry. So, for example, an apprenticeship program at Sansone Auto here in Middlesex County in Woodbridge, they've received some funding from Department of Labor, and they take individuals who come out of prison, they take individuals who are veterans, people who have, I would say, basically very entry-level work skills, and they come out of that training program sometimes making six figures to start employment.
Mm-hmm. May I join
sure,
this
absolutely.
Conversation?
Yes.
One of the things that you were saying that I think is so important is the sense of investment in
right.
an employee.
Right.
I think people hunger for that sense that the business is investing in the business and investing in them.
Right.
And I think the apprenticeship is such a positive way to do that.
Right.
One of the things that I'm hoping for is that parents will change their attitudes
yes.
a little bit.
I'm glad you touched on that.
I worry about parents who say, my kid is going to go to college.
Right.
Well, you know, maybe eventually your kid will go to college.
Right.
But in the meantime, maybe your kid could be trained to be a dynamite plumber or electrician.
Right.
Or someone who builds or services robots.
Sure.
Those middle skills are ones that many of our employers are having trouble finding.
Right.
And I always joke about the fact that, you know, most of the houses on the shore are owned by plumbers. So
yes.
what the
heck?
No,
that's true. It's true.
But the kinds of salaries that those jobs bring are,
right.
are substantial. And oftentimes, if we go back to what the commissioner said about the fact that your education doesn't end when you're 22.
Right.
You can go on to college. You can go on to get that degree eventually in history.
Exactly.
That will take you to so many places. And so I think if we're in an environment where education never ends, we don't want to overlook the value of certifications to do jobs
sure.
that are highly necessary.
Right. Well, those type of certifications, but also job skills. I mean, I think at this turn of the 20th century when it started, buggy whip salesmen were pretty bad shape. Okay,
right,
but the
yes.
buggy whip salesmen of yesterday could still sell stuff today.
Absolutely.
And I think
right.
that's what we're talking about. The movement of goods, the selling, the buying, the purchasing, all those type of things are how the development of an economy survives. You don't have to have a buggy whip salesman anymore.
Right.
And also the car mechanics you talk about don't have to change distributor caps anymore on
exactly.
cars. And the new cars that are coming in are going to probably have less maintenance requirement with the electric vehicles
sure.
that are coming in. But that doesn't mean there won't be more need for people to do other things in cars and do other types of services that we don't have today.
Right.
So things are changing good and dramatically.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We've got to build those charging stations. So who's going to build and install charging stations?
Well, the charging stations of tomorrow, right, are being built and assembled as we speak in Middlesex County. There are actually new charging stations coming up in all kinds of places. We had a show a couple of weeks ago talking about electric vehicles. And so those are things that 20 years ago nobody had to think about how to repair
right.
a charging station. Nobody had to think about what type of work. But that goes back to, I think, what Catherine and Kevin were saying about a skill set. Right now, how many people have an eighth grade child who's looking at his future, doesn't know what to do.
Right.
Understand that maybe if he learned how to fix a charging station or how to install a charging station or how to install solar panels or whatever it is, those jobs are there.
Sure. Absolutely. There are a lot of opportunities, and I'm glad you touched upon that, Catherine, because, you know, it's not becoming a plumber or something in a vocational trade should not be looked at as, well, that's the only thing my kid can do because maybe he's not ready for college yet. And as you say, college is always going to be there. And I think that your idea about a K through 14 model is really on point because I don't think that necessarily every child or every student coming out of high school is ready to know what they want to do. And they need those extra 2 years to kind of explore, whether it be through community college, vocational training, whatever it is, even maybe just going into the workforce and figuring out what they want to do. And you can go to college at any time. College is not going anywhere. We're not going to come to a point in our society where all the colleges are gone. They're always going to exist. And I used to work at a community college, and I used to tell students, listen, we're always going to be here. If this is not the right place for you right now, step out, do something else, and then come back when the time is right for you. So I think that's important to look at. It's something that we have to prepare for the future in terms of our workforce. So we're looking at different opportunities that exist, and we need to be prepared. Advanced manufacturing is another area. Yeah, you can walk into a warehouse now and not see many people working at the warehouse, but there are a lot of machines there. Those machines still need to be repaired. And so there are a lot of people behind the scenes, sitting in a booth looking at multiple screens and making sure that all the machines are running. So there's still jobs that exist there. It's just, how do we prepare today's job seeker for those opportunities? And so one of the things that we want to do at the Career One Stop Center is not just send people for training on an individual basis, but we want to go to businesses and say, okay, how many people do you need next year for expansion, and what kinds of training do they need? And then what we want to do is actually purchase a classroom, like let's say at Middlesex County College, and put 20 or 30 people through that training at one time so that when they finish, they'll be ready to go out to the workforce and work with a particular company. It'll be much easier to place 30 people at one time into one or two employers as it is to try to place 30 people into individual employment sectors. So that's something that we're currently working on for this upcoming program year, which starts in July.
When we were talking transportation about public-private type partnerships,
right.
I think that's the type of things we're going to be looking at in education too.
Yes.
When the employers are going to have to realize their investments into their workforce is going to pay them back.
Right.
And I think that's an important part that employers are starting to learn.
Yes. Definitely I think we heard a lot about public-private partnerships in transportation. That's something that we really need to investigate further. The commissioner talked about it, how we need to bring employers to the table because, let's face it, government it doesn't have all the answers. Government doesn't have all the funding. We can certainly work with the private sector and find solutions to some of these issues of transportation. My predecessor, Kathy Shaw, she often talked about establishing transportation improvement districts, much like business improvement districts. And maybe that's something that we need to explore. But we need to get innovative, I think, in what we're looking at. And transportation is changing, too, as you talked about electric cars and driverless cars, ride-sharing services. I think they need to be brought to the table as well and talk about how we can meet some of these deficits that exist with getting people, for example, from downtown New Brunswick to the southern part of the county where jobs exist. Sure, we can go to New Jersey Transit and, say, create a couple of bus routes, but you know what? That's going to take years. It may never happen.
It's not only going to take years. It's also going to not provide the door-to-door service that an employer needs. I mean, if you get a shuttle bus, we have shuttles.
Sure.
We do have, Middlesex County does provide shuttles down to 8A and those warehouses. But the warehouses are so spread out.
Yes.
I mean, getting dropped off at a bus stop might still give you 2 miles before you get to the warehouse you're working at. It's never going to be that kind of location that's going to provide door-to-door type of service. And there's issues there that we have to address in terms of ride-sharing, those type of programs.
And it can't just be one company doing it. I mean, we have all those companies down there. They really need to work together. It would make sense if you have 15 companies all providing some sort of funding for that shuttle and then being able to provide that service, and it would be a great way to do it.
I think that's the way we're going to have to wrap it up and look into the future, is that transportation has so many aspects that we look at into the world. Job creation, job retention, all those type of things are important. So I want to thank Commissioner Sarangelo for joining us today. I know the Murphy administration is working hard to improve things for all the residents of New Jersey. Catherine Kish from Einstein's Alley, appreciate your being here for us and working with us. And Kevin Kurzel from the Middlesex County Development, Workforce Development. We're going to be wrapping up in a few more minutes about how we can talk about these type of future things. I think it's important that we understand that the transportation element is the key element that we look at to tie all these things together.
Yes,
and I
absolutely
appreciate you understanding that with workforce development. Catherine, you wanted to say something about how we're looking into the future?
Yeah, I was going to say something about the changing jobs and transportation. One of the groups that is going to be affected positively, I think, by growing automation in transportation are our seniors.
Yes.
And one of the areas where we need to begin to change the dialogue on occupations is in the healthcare field, in thinking about senior care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to have to think about how to upgrade the sense of the importance of those jobs and make them attractive opportunities for people who haven't yet thought about those fields as being something that they were interested in doing.
Sure.
Because our demography is changing.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We're getting older. Not any of us, of course, but other people.
I am. I'm starting to get gray, finally.
Well, Catherine, we did have a show on Healthier Middlesex about access to medical care. The issue of transportation there is this: there's something like $150 billion of lost money to the medical fields because of
people not being
no-shows.
Able to, yeah,
because
right.
of no-shows.
Yeah.
So it's all part of transportation. I think that's why the Mobility Matters show has been trying to touch on how transportation affects so many parts of our lives.
Right.
And I think that's what the goal of this show has been. I think it's been great that we've had people who can do those type of programs and people who can talk about these things.
Sure.
And looking into the next shows we're going to be doing about the New Jersey Transit, about Gateway Tunnel, about the things that are going to impact us all on a statewide level. So once again, thank you so much for being here. We really
thank you.
Appreciate
it. Thanks.